From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Friday on this program when we heard from doctors and a nurse on the front lines of treating COVID-19 at Strong Memorial Hospital. They described the state of the pandemic in their own departments. Some of those areas, they said, are nearing disaster-like conditions as the virus continues to spread at alarming rates. They worry about their patients, their colleagues, about staffing shortages, and about the possibility of having to ration care. That's not a given, that's not a definite. But in recent days, that's been the trajectory we're on if we don't arrest this spread. Medical experts at Rochester Regional Health have similarly been working around the clock under extreme stress to treat people from across our community. This hour, we hear from them about what they're seeing, what their concerns are, and what they want the community to know as we try to get through this pandemic winter, one where vaccines are, well, they're arriving for some of us by the day, but for others, we are weeks or months away still. So it's not over yet. And listeners, if you want to share your experience or have questions, you can join the program and they can help. I will welcome our guests now. Dr. Chris Reynolds is a hospitalist at Rochester General Hospital. Dr. Reynolds, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity.
Sarah Goodnow is a registered nurse and nurse navigator at Unity Hospital. Sarah, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Evan.
Kara Boyd is a registered nurse and nurse manager for Rochester Regional Health in the Eastern Region. That's Newark Wayne. Kara, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us this morning.
And Deborah Conrad, a physician assistant at United Memorial Medical Center in Batavia. Deborah, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All four of you have been in different places at different times throughout this pandemic and in recent days. I'd like to start by asking you to describe where your work takes you and what the conditions have been like in recent days. Dr. Reynolds, I'll start with you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think there's a duality in, for those of us who are working in healthcare right now. Taking care of sick people is what we do. It's, in a sense, exhilarating to be able to apply our expertise when the community needs us so badly. However, the persistent or the worsening case rate has really been a trying time for all of us as well. Many members of our healthcare team are required to do extra moonlighting or work overtime, and I know that can sound perhaps unsympathetic to the patients or to the people who are economically distressed by this pandemic, and I want to express my concern for them as well. Many of the members of the healthcare team really feel strained by what we're dealing with right now.
And before I turn to your other colleagues, what's the difference in the last week or the last month compared to, say, the end of summer?
Yeah, there's been a huge increase in the number of cases that we're taking care of lately. I think at the end of the summer, Monroe County was reporting about, 22 some odd infections towards the end of August. Over the last several days, we're reporting something like 600 infections a day in January. The statistic that I can't quite wrap my head around still is that a year ago at Rochester General, we had no patients in the hospital with COVID. It was a disease we didn't have. And if you look at the hospital today, we have well over 200 patients in our 528-bed hospital who are dealing with COVID. And that has crowded out our opportunity to provide the kind of care that we would ordinarily like to do. I think we're still providing top-notch care, but it's much, much harder with this crush of new patients.
Yeah, and we stress this every time we talk about this. I'll stress it again now. The purpose of this conversation is not to scare anyone. It's not to unnecessarily alarm or frighten, but to be very direct about what we're dealing with as a community and what those in the medical system are dealing with. So how close to capacity are you, and what is the sort of the trend line look like to you, Doctor?
I guess the good news is the last several days that maybe the trend line has abated a little bit. However, we're very, very busy. I mean, even a year ago, before we had 200 some COVID patients in the hospital, the hospitals in Rochester were quite often quite full. And so this is really a trying time for us. And we in healthcare really want to provide top-notch care to the community. But we also need to make sure that the community is aware that we all have a part to play in controlling the spread of this pandemic.
Sarah, tell us about where work has taken you and what it's been like in recent days.
Yeah, so I actually redeployed to work on one of our units that we turned into. It was a surgical unit that we turned into a full patient unit to care for anybody that's coming in with COVID. And it's been challenging, but I'd have to say that the teamwork and kind of utilizing what we have as resources has been where our strengths have kind of shown. We're all being redeployed from different parts of the healthcare system. And on our unit in particular, we have nurses from, you know, GI, surgery, OR, the PACU, a couple out from ICU. And at first it was kind of trying to get our bearings around, you know, how do we tackle this and how do we do it in the best way for the patients? And we've really come together and worked together with our physicians, with our respiratory therapists, with social work, and really found where our strengths lie. You know, for example, you know, I'm ICU trained. So a lot of times when there's a patient that's going critical, I'll take care of them and I'll help with facilitating the plan of care with the doctors. And, you know, another example is I'm not the best with putting IVs in or taking blood. So we know that PACU nurses do that on a regular basis. So we'll go to our PACU nurses to get those things done in a meaningful amount of time for the patients, and using our doctors and what they've been working on with their patients, if they're overseeing them for long periods of time, and kind of finding where the challenges are that they have found the most, and then working with them from our end as nurses at the bedside on helping get them and get our patients to where, you know, we've been trying to get them on their plan of care. And it's really been, it's amazing to see, and it's amazing to see how fast we've been able to really work together and, you know, use our resources to the best of our ability. And the patient outcomes have been much better, and it's really great to see the teamwork.
I was going to ask if there's sort of a consistent biggest challenge with COVID, but I mean, I know every case is different, and frankly, that makes this disease so difficult to deal with, given that there's no way to predict how it's going to impact any given individual. How are the patients handling it? I mean, we have heard some really difficult stories about just, you know, the way it separates families and the surprise that some people have of how severe it can become. You know, what have you sort of experienced in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of patients are scared, and a lot of it's because they don't have the people and their families that are normally there to support them with them. And a lot of times we're taking the place of, you know, taking care of them, supporting them emotionally. We've even got iPads on the unit so that we can do FaceTime with their family members. And a lot of, I guess, the most important role right now that we've taken on as nurses, on top of, you know, providing nursing care and executing the plan of care that the doctors put in place, is communicating with the families and also kind of being that mediator and liaison between the patient, the family, and the doctor, and being able to take the technical things that, you know, doctors are doing and the tests, and being able to put them in layman's terms and, you know, speak to the patient where the patient's at, and speak to the families where the families are at, and then connecting them all together. And that has been, I'd say, during COVID, one of the most important roles that we've played as nurses, is, you know, just bringing everybody together. And that way it facilitates the plan of care. It makes things move in a better direction. It creates more of a appreciation and gratitude from all ends, because now we're working together as a team. The patients feel supported, the families feel supported. And, you know, we have a lot going on as bedside nurses in a day. And, you know, taking that time out to call one of the family members back, or FaceTiming with them, with their family member, and allowing them to just have that private time in their rooms with their FaceTime to just, you know, talk to each other, it makes all of the difference in the patient, and they always feel so much better for it. So that's really been what's helped get these patients through, especially when they're really scared and feel alone.
Kara Boyd is a registered nurse and nurse manager for Rochester Regional Health. And Kara, why don't you give us a sense for where work has taken you in recent days, where you're doing most of that work, and what you've been seeing?
So I kind of echo what my colleagues are saying, but I have a little bit more of a different role. I'm a little bit more behind the scenes with a lot of the work that's going on. So, you know, I have teams that report to me, and we are trying to manage patient care and bed flow. Meanwhile, working with leadership to deploy vaccinations and just getting through the day-to-day things that change on us so rapidly. You know, I echo what they say too. You know, nobody planned for COVID to come here, but it brings you back to why you came into healthcare in the first place, and it's really for the patients. And so every day, you know, team members are working day in and day out to provide safe care and to really, you know, manage patients in a way that we've never had to manage them before. And so, you know, I have to kind of give a shout out to all of our ancillary services that support all of the great work that we do, from housekeeping to, you know, records management to facilities. They all impact the work that we do every day. And so it's really just been being nimble with the ever-changing things that, you know, COVID brings upon us. So that's where my work has taken me. And so there really is, you know, meaning to the teams at the end of the day when, you know, they've worked for 12 hours tirelessly to say, oh, man, you know, we did a good job taking care of people today. So that's where my work has taken me, and I'm happy to be a part of such a wonderful healthcare system. And we really just are looking to the community to, you know, just follow the instructions that we've been, you know, given. Stay home when you can, practice diligent hand hygiene, you know, get your vaccination when you're able to.
Yeah. And Kara, I remember early in the pandemic, I watched an interview with Dr. Michael Osterholm, who is now part of the incoming administration's COVID task force. And Dr. Osterholm said, this was back in last March, he said, you know, we're going to see New York City and the biggest hubs get hit the hardest first, and rural America won't see very many cases. And then over time, cases will migrate, and it will be a surprise to places that didn't have it early in the pandemic. It was exactly what has happened. And I think in more rural, less densely populated areas, there was a feeling for a while that, you know, that it's not as much of a risk here. We won't travel as much here. We don't really have it here. Are people surprised to see how far this disease has traveled and how many people have been affected in your experience, Kara?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the numbers do wax and wane. You know, as Dr. Reynolds had mentioned, 3 months ago, we didn't have nearly as much COVID activity and folks in the hospital as we do today. And I think it hits different people in different stages. I think, you know, if it happens to you or it happens to somebody that you know, then you have a little bit more of appreciation of what might be going on. You know, we see young people in our hospitals that otherwise have no comorbidities, and it's really affecting them in a critical way. They're in our ICUs. And, you know, some of these folks are asymptomatic, and you don't know that you're passing COVID along. And so it's really tricky in the way that we have to manage these patients. Even with my own team yesterday on the floor, one of the nurses said, oh my goodness, like right away into the shift, we had to escalate this patient to the ICU. And I said, you know, I don't think that it's an inappropriate placement of the patient initially. I think that these patients are just deteriorating so rapidly. And so it's really tricky and, you know, something I don't feel like we've seen before in the past. And it just affects everybody a little bit differently. And so I think, you know, I didn't ever feel like we were, you know, not going to be affected. I have a pretty healthy appreciation for what's going on, you know, the entire time. But yeah, it's pretty scary. So that's why we really, you know, want people to understand what it's like, you know, being behind the scenes and in the front lines of healthcare during, you know, unprecedented times of the global pandemic.
And just I want to press one point before I turn to Deborah on this. When you say patients are deteriorating quickly in some cases, I imagine that includes blood oxygen. Are there other factors that you would describe there for listeners who haven't been in your shoes to see that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think a lot of people have heard that pretty much anything can be a side effect as it relates to COVID. But you are absolutely correct. It's typically a respiratory decompensation. And so they're, you know, breathing fine. Maybe they're on, you know, an oxygen nasal cannula delivery system. But then all of a sudden, you know, they're hit with shortness of breath. They can't breathe very well, and we're needing to increase their oxygen needs. And so, that's when, you know, you kind of have to get discussions and maybe what a higher level of care looks like for that patient.
Deborah Conrad, a physician assistant at United Memorial Medical Center in Batavia. What have you experienced in recent days, Deborah? Can you take us through that?
Sure. Well, echoing, obviously, my outstanding colleagues that are on the phone, where it's taken me, you know, as a provider, I've been a PA for well over 17 years now, and I've never in my career experienced what I've been experiencing this past year. I mean, in the spring, things in Batavia were a rural community, so we didn't see a lot of COVID cases in the spring. But now, you know, there are times I say I feel like I'm on a MASH episode because it's can be absolutely crazy. And where it's taken me is I've gone from not just being a provider, but also to helping staff out with feeding patients, changing patients, getting patients out of bed. Kind of everybody is stepping up out of their usual roles to help provide the best outcomes for patients. I often stay beyond my work shift to help people on the floors. Just before I came on the radio, one of the nurses on the floor said, "Deb, I ordered you lunch because I know you're not going to get to it." So, you know, just the teamwork that I have at this hospital is incredible. And I'm sorry, I'm going to get choked up because we have great team here. And we really have come together as a hospital. Many of us have worked so hard in trying to keep these patients doing well and keeping them positive and keeping them connected with their families. And we're all very passionate about trying to get patients through this very difficult time in their lives, in our lives, and in their families' lives. Because many of them obviously can't see their loved ones or they've not seen their loved ones sometimes up to a year if they've come from long-term care facilities. So we just do our best to keep everybody as positive as possible for the best outcomes that we can have. But the teamwork is just incredible I have seen.
And I want to talk about that team a little bit. What is the strain like on the staff, and are you concerned about burnout?
You know, I am. We are all, I mean, many of us cry on a daily basis. It's funny, I was talking to one of the male RNs yesterday about this, and he says, "Debbie, I have my daily cry in the shower." You know, and we do. Many of us are very stressed. Many of us are having a hard time sleeping. For myself personally, getting home so late, it's very hard to unwind because I live in the community. I'm part of this community, and I don't have an ability to be able to really unwind at the end of my work shift. So that's very taxing on you as an individual. Plus, you know, we're working so hard during the day. Many of us forget to eat, drink, go to the bathroom, the normal things, because we're just running around trying to get things done and get families called and, you know, things like that. So it is very taxing on all of us, you know, very much. But we just try to just get through it and help each other.
Yeah. And, you know, and Deborah, I mean, I don't want to press the point or be glib about, you know, sort of some of the extreme views of the pandemic from people who have either doubted how serious it is or continued to say that it's overblown. And I think there are good and important debates about policy and business closures and opening. I mean, I think all of those are fair and difficult. I mean, this is a long-running pandemic now, and this is a very difficult thing to handle. But what is it like for you and your colleagues when you hear some of the more extreme rhetoric that doubts it or, you know, claims that this is sort of a not even necessarily a hoax, but some sort of an overgrab from health and government? I mean, what is that like for you?
You know, I do respect everybody's opinion on the matter, but I myself personally always tell people COVID does exist. It's very much exists. I live it. I breathe it. It's in my everyday workplace. It is here. It is real. Again, do some patients do very well and they're, you know, relatively asymptomatic and they feel fine? Yes, but there are many, many who don't and have a very long protracted illness. And the problem with COVID is that we really don't have any rhyme or reason of who's going to do well and who's not. And I always say it's like a Russian roulette. We don't know. I mean, yes, the far majority of patients who have a more protracted or severe illness pattern tend to be people who have comorbidities and things like that. But that's not always the case. Like one of the colleagues on the phone said that, you know, you'll have some young person with no comorbidities all of a sudden show up and they don't do well. And that's very distressing. So, for those who, you know, again, are saying, well, this doesn't exist or what have you, it very much does. It's out there. And yes, if you're young and healthy, statistics are in your favor, but we do have patients who do not do well, who are young and healthy.
Yeah, and again, not asking for any names or specifics, but have you had patients mm-hmm. say to you, have you had patients say, wow, I can't believe this is happening to me or a family member or whatever, and we didn't take it seriously, or I get it now? I mean, do those moments happen?
Yes, I do. I do have that. I also have patients on the other end of the spectrum who are so distressed because they did everything they could do and they got it and are beating themselves about it as well. Mm. So I counsel, it's funny, both ends of the spectrum, you know, because I think there's a level of frustration on the side of people who are so diligent about doing everything and they're in our hospital with COVID.
Yeah.
I actually had a guy relatively recently with that exact scenario, and he spent his days crying, blaming himself that he did something wrong. And I told him, my gosh, you've done everything right. And unfortunately, these things happen and we just have to move forward. So I have it on both ends of the spectrum. We have people that come in that maybe weren't as diligent about hand washing or staying, or I actually have somebody now who, it was a situation where they contracted it from a family member and it was just devastating. And now it's very real to them. It's on both ends of the spectrum.
Wow.
It's really hard.
Well, let me work in with some questions from our audience for all of our guests. Dr. Reynolds, Sarah Goodnow, Kara Boyd, Deborah Conrad, all joining us, sharing their perspective and their expertise. And I'm going to start on the phone with Marie in Fairport. Go ahead, Marie.
Hi. Thank you. I wondered how the care has changed from the beginning early last year over the course of the year to this year, if it has changed. In addition, thank you so much for what you do. I don't know how you're finding the people to do this between taking care of patients and administering vaccines. It's just like mind-boggling. But thank you so very much.
Yeah, Marie, thank you. And so let's give Marie an answer. And I'll say to our guests on the phone with us today, we are grateful for your time and for what you're doing for this community and this region. And I hope I speak for all of our listeners. Dr. Reynolds, Marie's wondering how care has changed from early in the pandemic to now with this disease.
Yeah, absolutely. We have learned a lot about COVID as an illness over the course of these last several months. And there are some treatments now that we know can help patients avoid some of the serious consequences of COVID. So when patients get low on oxygen, we have a steroid medication called dexamethasone. We have a antiviral medication called remdesivir. We have some techniques for how to position patients. We can lay them on their chests rather than on their backs to help improve their breathing. And there are even some what are called monoclonal antibody treatments that can prevent some patients early in their illness from getting much sicker. So there are a variety of treatments that have been developed over the course of this past year that really have created some opportunity for us to help patients that we wouldn't have been able to help in March or April.
At the same time, you know, we are seeing, unfortunately, Dr. Reynolds, in our community, hundreds of new cases every day, 343 new in Monroe County alone yesterday. And that's actually a low number given recent days. I mean, we've seen an average close to 600 a day, 700 a day for a number of weeks now. So unfortunately, we're also seeing a spike in deaths. And we often see, you know, sort of a correlation of cases to deaths around something like, you know, 1 to 1.5% of new cases tend to result in deaths in a 2 to 3 week time frame. So Would those numbers have been different, you think, if we were sitting here having this conversation and we had 600 to 800 cases confirmed a day in April, would we have high? Do you think we're saving more lives, I think is what I'm asking, because we still have a lot of cases.
I think you're asking if the mortality rate has gone down.
Yeah, right.
The pandemic. Yep. And the answer, I think, is absolutely yes. It is better than it was. It's by no means an easy illness to get people through when they get very sick. But as I said, we have learned a lot about this illness over the last year, and some of the medications and some of the other tools that we have, we're better able to apply now than we could back in the springtime. And so the mortality rate has dropped somewhat.
Let me ask all of you what I asked your colleagues a week ago, not to paint sort of a fearful picture, but just to be honest about the track we've been on. Dr. Reynolds, you said that at least in the last week we may be seeing an abating of rising case numbers. We want to see that become a long-term trend, not just a 1 or 2 or 3 day trend, and so we'll keep our eye on it. But what is sort of, in your mind, a biggest concern or worst-case scenario in terms of how the medical system is handling cases and what's going on in this community?
Well, I think the way I'm coming at this is I think our community members all need to think about what they want out of this pandemic. And I'll say that what I want, I'll back up one step, and that is that I think probably all of us at some point are either going to get this infection or we're going to get the vaccine. And what I want is for my loved ones not to get sick. I want for many, many more of us to get the vaccine than get the infection. I want more of us to get through the illness without the long-term consequences that the illness can sometimes cause. And I want all of us to be around for the holidays next winter, as difficult as these holidays were and, you know, whatever other holidays are coming up. I want many more of us to be around for those wonderful life events next year. I want to be able to visit our loved ones in nursing homes. And if other members of our community want the same things that I want, then we all need to pitch in and do more. We have a duty to protect one another, not just ourselves with our masks, but we're protecting the other people around us with those masks. And I think it's really important that we all pitch in and prevent infection and save lives.
Sarah Goodnow, registered nurse and nurse navigator at Unity. What do you see as your biggest concern or worst case?
I guess my biggest concern is just the fact, you know, to reiterate what Dr. Reynolds said, it's just being able to do whatever we can to prevent the need for coming into the hospital. You know, besides COVID, we have other things and other patients and other issues that we see on a regular basis. And this is a tough time for healthcare systems as it is. In the winter, we see an influx in the flu and a lot of other issues. And so, you know, putting your mask on, social distancing, it's not so much, you know, not getting it as much as it is the fact that we're at capacity, we're doing everything that we need to do as a healthcare system to, you know, be able to provide for the people that need to come in. But if we don't have other people that are practicing, you know, healthy living or disease prevention or COVID prevention, we still have that capacity issue. And as people are coming in, it's still straining the system. And, you know, doing whatever you can to prevent something, if there is a way to prevent it and a way to prevent yourself from coming into the hospital, then that's my reason for, you know, pushing for people to, you know, do disease preventing measures like using the masks and social distancing. It's to help us, help you guys, and help the community. And, you know, we did have to spend our Christmas and our New Year's with our patients just the same way that they had to spend them without their families. And so we made the best out of it. But, yes, I'm hoping, just like Dr. Reynolds, that next year we get to spend Christmas and New Year's with our families and that everybody else gets to as well.
Amen. And, by the way, Sarah, do you know offhand how many ICU beds there are on a regular basis compared to how many, you know, you've had to add or what capacity is right now?
I don't know the technical numbers behind that, but I do know that we have had to kind of make shift different units and open up surgical units that like the one that I work on right now that typically don't see patients and do bedside care. And, you know, we're doing a great job of it. And our leaders and our leadership team have really trusted us to do what's necessary to provide the best care in those situations. And, you know, on my unit, one of our focuses has been preventing the needs for ICU and ventilators. And that involves, you know, seeing what patterns exist in our patients. And, you know, the first week was really hard, but as time goes on, we're seeing these patterns and we're knowing, you know, kind of where the direction of things are going and mitigating a lot of complications and any issues so that we can actually keep people a little healthier. And, you know, communicating with our providers, it has been one of the biggest things that we focused on as a unit. And, you know, we're messaging our doctors all day long. We're calling our doctors and on the phone with them all day long, basically being, you know, data collectors for them, because they're also strained and seeing more patients than they normally do. And, you know, utilizing some of our nurses that are critical care or ICU, when they start to see one of their patients, you know, decompensating or their oxygen needs going up, they'll reach out to an ICU nurse on the unit and say, hey, can you just listen to this person's lungs, or can you just take a look at, you know, their labs and see, do you think there's anything more that they need, or is there something I should communicate to the doctor a little bit more? And that has been such a useful tool in preventing the need for ICU beds and mm-hmm. for ventilators, and keeping them necessary and open for the patients that really, really need them. It's been a challenge, but it's been one that I think our unit has done a really great job of doing, and our providers, being our doctors, our PAs, have really worked with us so well. And they're on the phone right away when we need them. They're messaging us back and we're asking them questions, and, you know, they're coming down to the bedside and talking to the patients, talking to us at the same time, so that we can be part of the plan of care and really work together as a team. And like I said, it's really made a huge difference in mitigating any issues and taking care of things as they come up, yeah. and just following the patterns that we've seen in our COVID patients. Mm.
Kara Boyd, what is capacity like in your ICU?
I've been at full capacity for weeks now. So that's a really tricky balancing act that we go through every day as a healthcare system. And that's one of the great things about being a part of a healthcare system. There are quite a few miles between us out here in the Eastern region and my colleagues over in Batavia at UMMC and all the space in between. And so what we do every day is look at all the beds that we have and then all the beds that are full and then anticipated discharges and then, you know, barriers to discharges. One of our barriers to discharges has been acquiring long-term care residents who are COVID positive. They're not able to go back to the facility COVID positive. So something that Rochester Regional Health has done very quickly was put together a long-term care facility that could accommodate COVID-positive patients and really decompress those inpatient acute care units. So that's just one example of some of the work that we do every day. Hmm. Another thing that we didn't really talk about here as far as how care has been affected is a little bit of a change in workflow. So, you know, every time we have to go into a COVID positive patient's room, there is a lot of dressing up that goes into that. We have PPE that we wear and putting it on and taking it off and disinfecting your face shield. You don't really think about it, but it takes quite a bit more time. And as you progress throughout the shift, you're doing that every patient encounter as far as, you know, your COVID positive patients, and to keep you safe, your team members safe, and your patients safe. And so that really takes a good amount of time out of the healthcare workers' day as well. And so I think it's just something that people don't necessarily think about, but that's a reality to us every day.
Deborah Conrad, out at United Memorial Medical Center in Batavia, what is your biggest concern and sort of maybe a worst-case scenario going forward?
Some of my concerns are that, you know, with the initiation of the vaccines, that people keep in mind that even if they get the vaccine, they should still continue to keep their mask, do social distancing, wash their hands. I don't want the vaccine to give people a false sense of security that they can just then not continue to do the things that are needed to keep others safe, is one of the things. And I just want people to, like one of my colleagues said about keeping themselves personally healthy if they can, to try to avoid to have to come into the hospital, being it, you know, taking your medications, listening to your doctor's advice in the community, trying to get yourself healthy,
to try to avoid having to come into the hospital, moving forward. Worst case scenario is I hope it doesn't get any worse. I hope that we're headed with the vaccines and with maybe some of these numbers maybe coming down a little bit, we're headed for a better 2021 where, yes, we will be able to open some things up and be able to visit our families again and things will get better for us. That's what I'm very hopeful for, moving forward.
Well, I'm with you, Deborah. As we go to break, I'll just paint a scenario that maybe Deborah and her colleagues would cheer here. In just 2 months, imagine we are ready for spring. We are seeing the most of the most vulnerable population in this state vaccinated. We are working hard as a community to make sure we're behaving responsibly. We have a federal leadership supporting small businesses that are scared and hurting. And the case numbers and death numbers have dropped off the table in 2 months, and we are ready for all of the things we want to come back to do it slowly and responsibly and safely as we more and more of us get vaccinated. But we've got a lot of work to get there if we're going to get there. And our guests joining us from their various healthcare systems are telling us about their experiences and realities with COVID to keep that top of mind. We got more of your phone calls. If you're on the phone, Julian Pittsford will take you on the other side. We also have some emails to read as well, and we'll do that next. Coming up in our second hour, Congressman Joe Morelli joins us on Connections. He'll answer our questions and your questions about what relief is available now and what relief is still to come for struggling Americans and businesses during the pandemic. We'll talk about what Congress and Washington are trying to do for people and how that aid might arrive. We'll also talk about the insurrection at the Capitol, impeachment, and more with Congressman Morelli next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Julie in Pittsford next on the phone. Go ahead, Julie.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about, I saw an article in Forbes saying they're doing some studies with COVID or with cannabis helping people with post syndromes from COVID. I have a lot of friends that have either lung issues or I've heard about some damage that can happen to you, even in your heart, but also people losing their sense of smell and taste. And I'm just curious what your guests have to say about this topic and to learn more about what happens afterwards when people have COVID.
Yeah, it's a good question. Thank you, Julie. Dr. Reynolds, you want to start on that one?
I guess the short answer is I don't have access to that that research, and I'm not in a position to speak about it.
Okay. Sarah, Kara, Deborah, anybody want to is there more that we know about that?
I would actually echo what Dr. Reynolds said. I hadn't heard of that, and I wouldn't be able to speak to that either.
But Dr. Reynolds, is it fair to say that that we shouldn't assume or that we are too often looking at COVID as, well, this person got COVID and survived and this person didn't, and as if those are the only two outcomes?
Yes, absolutely. I think I think it's important to say that the vast, vast majority of patients who get COVID survive and do quite well. And we are strained, however, by the subset of patients who get terribly ill or in fact, die. And I think there is an enormous amount of research ongoing presently about what we can do to impact the outcomes for our COVID patients. And I think we need to wait and let the deliberate research and the careful scientists pursue the various avenues that will let us find treatments and things that will help our patients.
Yeah, and I'll just emphasize, I'm not great with math, and for listeners who have maybe either struggled with the math of this pandemic or found themselves thinking, well, boy, this is, what if only 1% who have COVID die? Or what if it's only 0.6%, 0.6%? What if only 4% are hospitalized or whatever? Yes, I mean, like, at first glance, if you're not really a statistician, as I am not, those numbers don't look, quote, that bad. But when you apply them to a population level and hundreds of thousands of people are getting infected, 1% dying, 0.5% dying when there is no vaccine overwhelms the healthcare system. When 3% get hospitalized, it overwhelms the healthcare system. And I hope we all keep that in mind in the future because we may live through another pandemic in the future. And it may be worse than this one. So, go ahead, Doctor.
One thing to add to that is I think many Americans are aware that heart disease has for a long time been the number one killer of Americans. And heart disease is a combination of heart attacks and heart failure and sudden cardiac death and a whole variety of other heart conditions. And we are currently on track, if we look at March 2020 to March 2021, to have COVID be the leading cause of death in the United States nationally. And that's just a single disease overwhelming all the other heart diseases that get lumped together when we think of heart disease as being the leading cause of death.
That is with social distancing, the shutdown or the slowing down of many businesses, cancellation of festivals and crowded events, that is with all of the mitigation efforts. I mean,
right.
I cannot imagine what would have happened to the healthcare system if we decided to go with, well, let's just get to herd immunity as fast as we can. I cannot even begin. I'm grateful that we didn't do that as a society, but the numbers are rough. So let me hit some other points here. Dr. Reynolds, Joe says Regeneron was approved for use in patients with COVID in November. To my knowledge, it was not available for general patient use in Rochester in early December. One of the panel members, I think Dr. Reynolds, mentioned drugs with monoclonal antibodies. Does this mean Regeneron and similar drugs are now available here? And if so, can patients access them?
There are some availability for these medications in our region. I'm not in a position to give you the details myself.
Okay. I know it's frustrating for listeners because, you know, the president himself talked about Regeneron and promised that it would be available for every American with COVID. To my knowledge, that has not yet been the case. But hopefully we're at a point soon where we're going to see vaccination numbers go way up. Let me see here. Mark says, the nurses take every case personally. Please thank them from my family. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Deborah Conrad, let me kick that to you. He says, in his experience, nurses and I'm sure entire staffs, and I'm sure Mark would agree, take these cases seriously. And I know you've got to find a way to not let every case sort of emotionally overload you because you're dealing with a lot of COVID right now. But I hate to ask this, Deborah, but when you lose a patient, does it feel personal?
Oh, yes, very much. And unfortunately, that's on a more frequent basis than I wish it had to be. Yes, very much. But with that, when we save a patient, it's just as, you know, it's wonderful. But there are many a nights that I go home and ask myself, you know, if I had done something different or we had approached something different, would they have had a different outcome? And, you know, and that is with every patient that we lose, irregardless of cause. But certainly COVID takes it to a whole new level because these patients, one of the things that I guess COVID, that differs with COVID from other diseases is that the patients, at least many of them that come in the hospital are incapacitated. Even people who are, you know, who work and are active members, you know, of society running around, they get, some of them get COVID and they are so fatigued that they require so much hands-on care, that they have such overwhelming amounts of care. You know, it's just incredible. And with and so that taxes our staff even more. So yes, it does become very personable. And that's something hard to let go. You know, it really is sometimes.
Can I also ask, Deborah, I mean, I read, especially early in the pandemic, but I'm not sure that this has changed, that for some patients, there was an abating of symptoms or sort of a seeming course toward improvement, and then there would be a crash or a setback. Does that still happen?
It does. Yes, it does. And actually, these past couple of days, I've been saying to myself, geez, it seems like, I don't know if there's something different going on, but I've been seeing that more recently with patients where, you know, their numbers will look good and their oxygenation looks good. And then all of a sudden I come in and they're on oxygen and it's not mm-hmm. going along with how COVID usually runs. We usually have this kind of window of days that once we get them through that window of days, we usually assume that they're going to kind of continue to work in the right direction. But more lately, I've been having patients a little later in their hospital course, all of a sudden getting worse, and it's mm-hmm. it's not making sense. Or they're coming back in with, you know,
complications, you know, bacterial pneumonia or blood clots or something like that. And yeah, that's kind of a new thing I've been noticing with a couple of inpatients. I actually have a couple today that exact same thing is happening to them. They're later in the course of their illness, day, you know, 12, 13, and all of a sudden they're requiring more oxygen.
And I imagine, yeah, Deborah, yeah, I imagine that is, I imagine that's frightening, because whenever I've needed a doctor, I always want to be able to ask a question and get an answer. Why is this happening? Because X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
and when they ask you, you know, why is this happening to me? And you don't necessarily know, that's got to be frightening.
It is. And I'm always trying to figure out if there's some other reason. Mm. But sometimes we just don't have an answer. And that's the thing with COVID, is it's an ever dynamic, I swear, virus. Like you just, when you think you have a way to kind of, and a pattern of kind of treating it, and all of a sudden it shocks you and something else changes. And that's really kind of frustrating.
Well, Kara Boyd, Kara, can I ask you just briefly? I mean, Mark says that he wants to share gratitude for nurses, and I'm sure for entire health staffs, and says that the staffs have taken these cases personally. Do you want to weigh in on that, Kara?
Yeah, I have to echo what Deb says. You know, every time, you know, we lose a patient, it feels pretty personal. Being any kind of healthcare provider, you're giving a little bit of yourself every day. And that can be emotionally taxing. And we don't get any preparation for that, unfortunately. You know, maybe people code and pass away in the middle or beginning of our shift, and we still have 10 hours to go. You box that up and take it home with you for another time. And that's really hard, but we are kind of conditioned to work in that manner. But that builds up. And so, as my colleagues have mentioned, self-care during this time is so very important, and something that we stress to the team all the time. Make sure you're getting enough sleep. If you do feel like you have a symptom, please don't come to work. You know, eating nutritious food as opposed to leaning towards carbs and overeating during stress, those kinds of things to keep helping maintain healthy lifestyle, because it affects your mental health. And I think that there's a component of that that we don't really get to talk about a lot as it pertains to healthcare workers, because, you know, we don't talk about it because it's not that it's an expectation, but a little bit, it's just an expectation of our job at that point. So that's really hard for any kind of healthcare worker too. We are always, you know, devastated when we lose a patient, no matter what the cause is, like Deb had said. So, yeah, it's definitely tough. And it, because of COVID right now, unfortunately, we are seeing that happen more frequently. And so the emotional burden of that takes a toll on everybody on the team as well.
And Sarah, do you want to weigh in on that briefly? I'll grab one more phone call after you do. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody that gets into healthcare, anybody that wants to become a doctor or a nurse or anyone part of our team, we do it because we have a desire to serve others, to serve our community. And with that being said, we know that as long as we are putting every little bit of ourselves into it, that even when there is a negative outcome or we have a patient that passes, it's devastating to us, because when we walk through those doors and we put on our PPE and we, you know, assume our positions at work, we are treating our patients as if they are our own. And, you know, losing somebody is hard, but when you put your everything and your all into it, you at least walk away from it knowing that you did what you had to do and you did it with everything that you have. And when we do have good outcomes, I mean, it is something I can't describe to you. And, you know, we're still behind all of our patients as if they're our mother or our father or our children laying in the bed. And, you know, just an example is a patient that we had that we had been trying to get on dialysis for weeks, and the doctors had been trying so hard. And finally, we worked as a nursing team and a physician team to get that patient dialysis. And the first day she went, we heard over the loudspeaker that there was a code in dialysis, and all of us ran to the nurse that was caring for that particular patient that day, and we scrambled to call dialysis and to find out which patient it was, and it was to make sure that it wasn't ours, you know, it's somebody that we had worked so hard with protecting. And so we treat our patients as if, you know, they're our own, and we work together as a family. And it's just, yeah, so it's hard, but, you know, when we do have positive outcomes, it's one of the most rewarding and best feelings I couldn't even describe to you in words.
Well, I have less than a minute, so Robert and Webster called with a question. He says he's 76 years old. Will RRH hospitals or other locations give vaccines to people in his group, 1B? I don't know. I mean, boy, oh, boy. You know, Kara Boyd, do you have any idea on that? Are you doing... Yeah, go ahead.
So people who, my understanding is that people who fall under that class, the 1B, who are subscribed to Rochester Regional Healthcare would be eligible for that vaccine. So you have to go through, you have to be getting your primary care through Rochester Regional Health is my understanding. And maybe Dr. Reynolds might know even a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we're down to just a few seconds. Go ahead, Dr. Reynolds.
I think probably I would refer people to the websites.
Good idea. And we're also going to make sure that we have conversations with the county leadership who are in charge of vaccine rollout in our region. That'll be soon. In fact, that'll be the 25th at noon on this program, trying to get every question answered if you're wondering when you might be in line. But they are telling you, don't just call your doctor's office. Don't just flood the office with calls because they know you care. Jump on the New York State website for COVID-19 and try to sign up and see if you're eligible. Might be able to get an appointment through the website as well. Dr. Reynolds, Sarah Goodnow, Kara Boyd, Deborah Conrad, on behalf of all of our listeners, we think that the work you're doing is heroic. We are so grateful for you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just wonderful work they're doing. So grateful for it. More connections coming up in a moment.